Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
And the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. And welcome, Michael, and we already have David and Tim on the line as well. And good day.
Awesome. Good morning, everybody. How do you be this morning, Dr. Tim and David?
Wonderful.
Good. Just very well.
Wonderful.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, we're on day 16 of our celebration of Memorial Day. And for those who haven't been with us, we have decided to celebrate Memorial Day in a little different way than most people celebrate Memorial Day, and that is going out and getting drunk and making hamburgers and having a party, having a day off work. We're going to suggest that the purpose of Memorial Day is a little different than that, and that we really want to honor those who have been forced to kill others, to be killed, to be wounded, maimed, emotionally or physically, and honor those families who have had to deal with that atrocity and insanity on planet Earth. And the way that we've invited everyone to really memorialize these people, to really truly do a Memorial Day, is for each of us to be willing today to face at least one thing in our world that is made of hostility or fear, which contributes to war on the planet energetically, and to be willing to face that and remove it, to forgive it. If you're not familiar with the forgiveness work that we're doing, with the forgiveness process, that process is laid out on our website. You can go there free and download the first link under a particular section that says Aramaic Discoveries and Forgiveness, and then the worksheet process. So if you go to www.whyagain.com, on the right-hand side you'll see a link that says Download Worksheets. Please click on that link, download the explanation of the Aramaic Forgiveness process, and the worksheet. And we're here with Mindshifters Radio to support you on a daily basis on learning how forgiveness works. And we pretty much say this every day because we have new folks on the show every day. If your brain cells say forgiveness means I have something painful happening inside of me, but I'll forgive them, you're not doing forgiveness work, you're doing pardoning work. And we're here to introduce the concept of true forgiveness, the original idea of forgiveness as it was taught 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic language. And in that language, you would never be invited to forgive another. You would never be invited to forgive yourself. You'd be handed a tool with which, when you're in some kind of pain or turmoil, you go inside yourself and remove your pain and turmoil. It's an awesome process. And if enough of us would stop forgiving others and start to look inside of ourselves for the root of our pain and remove it, guess what would happen on planet Earth? War would disappear. All of the insanity that is done in the name of war, all of the money laundering and all of the money gathering that goes on would stop because we'd wake up and go, Oh, we're human beings. We are love. Oh, my goodness. This is designed for something other than this money-grubbing, rage-filled, pain-filled, insanity-filled world. It's time for something else. Now, lots of people talk about that as the real world. That is not the real world. We've been conned, folks. We've been tricked. And it's time for us to give up the con. And, you know, in the language of the ancients, when human life, love, was removed from the human experience, that was called the first death. Now, we don't have a word in our culture for a human body that walks around without a human life, but there are billions of them on the planet. It's a tradition in our cultures. And if you want to tap into and understand our definition of human life, all you have to do is go hold a newborn child. If you haven't done that yet, head over to your local hospital and just see if you can meet someone who will connect with you and allow you to just for one moment. There are actually centers where there are infants who are orphaned. And you can go in and support those children because, you know, if children aren't touched and held, they die. If they're not nurtured by human touch, they die. And so you can go into these places and you can volunteer and hold these newborns. And when you hold a newborn, you'll know what human life is. So that's human life. The epitome of non-human life is actually very well demonstrated in a new film that's been out, awesome film that's just been out a couple of weeks. And it's called I Am. And in that film, I Am, the producer of the film, a young man who made his fortune off of producing or directing Jim Carrey movies. Somebody, if you'd mute your phone, you're moving around and it's coming across the speakers here. So he made his fortune off of producing Jim Carrey movies, and he had a bicycle accident, and he was left with what's called post-concussion syndrome. And in the film, I Am, he explains that most people, this post-concussion syndrome is so painful that most people who have it commit suicide. And he had it, and he was really facing and looking at the end of his life. He had these mansions all over the world. He had everything, you know, all the things people would say would make one happy. And as he's staring into his death, he has a reprieve. His post-concussion syndrome goes away just spontaneously. Nobody knows how to treat it. Nobody knows what caused it, but he's free of it. And he takes a camera crew and starts to travel around the country and ask people what's wrong with the world. Ask wisdom keepers, people like Desmond Tutu. And at one point, he does a very poignant definition of insanity. And his definition of insanity is done visually. His definition of the absence of human life is done visually. And he shows himself sitting on his Mercedes in front of his Learjet. That's what this man who's got megabucks realizes is the definition of insanity. Having more than you need while other people are starving. And losing the idea of separation. One of the interesting ideas he goes into it is Darwin. And, you know, when Darwin comes to mind, I would think virtually everyone, the first thing that comes to mind is survival of the fittest. And he points out that in Darwin's book, Darwin uses that term twice. Darwin uses the word love, he points out in his book, 95 times. Darwin uses the idea of cooperation more than he uses the idea of survival of the fittest. And so his definition of insanity becomes more than what you need while others are starving. And it ties right in with the definition of insanity that we have been using in our work for four decades. And that is living a life without the active presence of love in your physiology. You're designed to embody a human life. We're here to support you in doing it. So, Jeannie, do you have any callers on the line? David, Terry, any comments to make or anything happening in the chat room?
Goodbye. Hi. There are several people in the chat room and on the phone both, but there's nobody got their hand up. Nobody's asking any questions yet.
Okay, cool. Well, then let's go on with this idea of the first death. In the ancient teachings, they talked about the first death. And it is the action, and we've actually coined a word for it because there is no word that describes what looks like a human body walking around without a human life. But we call it non-being. One who functions out of hostility and fear lives in non-being. Guess what? The first death, fortunately, is not permanent. And you can resurrect. Resurrection isn't about so much about the body as right here, right now, reclaiming your human life. When they talked in the ancient teachings about being reborn, it's kind of been turned into, you know, some kind of a, are you part of my club? But that's not what it is at all. It is that most humans who come here lose their human lives. They don't function as the active presence of love. And one day they wake up to, oh, my God, I am love. Oh, I could be doing love instead of this insanity. That's real rebirth. That's awakening to who we are once again and starting to live a human life. Otherwise, we live as non-beings. And so that's a term that we've coined to represent those who've experienced the first death. And if they decide to recover from it, then everything in their world changes. I was just speaking to a gentleman this morning who's a former member of a very large business organization, and he started to do this work about 5 years ago when we were in Hawaii, and he shared it, and he had retired from his mega business position. If I mentioned the business, you'd know exactly what it is, and he shared with me that, you know, he had just given up on the world, was kind of going to just hang out in Hawaii and let the world move on to ruin, to destruction. And so, and he may be listening on the phone, and if he is, I'd invite him to call in. And he shared with me this morning that now he's finding himself, he's back on the mainland, and he's finding himself, having rediscovered who he is, just running into people, having conversations with them about who they really are and functioning as human beings. And it's like, here's this man who had become a recluse, and if you're listening, I hope you're okay with me saying this, Tom, and he's got a ministry. He's ministering to people. He's talking to people about the active presence of love. This is real ministry. This isn't, you know, the churchianity stuff is just, in so many cases, just so far off the mark. But here's this man who's talking to these folks, and he spoke to me about a fellow who was the publicity person for his business, and we're talking mega billion-dollar business, and he was the publicity person for them, the head of their publicity department. He's now retired, and he's tapping into his spiritual life and actually working with his mother, who's passed away, on what she's now doing, and, you know, having conversations that humans are here to have. If you're a real human, you function out of love, and the things that, you know, most of the world are chasing, like as the fellow who did the movie I Am, for years he chased, he explains how, you know, I thought it was about money, and I started out with this house, and then I got a bigger house, and then I had a, I don't remember how many square foot, thousand house with all this beautiful art, and he takes us through his house and such, and when he realizes how insane that pursuit is if you don't have a human life, if you don't have the experience of the active presence of love, after his accident, and, you know, he kind of like, he has a near-life experience. Now, most people call it a near-death experience. The world, as usual, has it backwards. If the body, if the so-called body clinically dies and is resuscitated, the person who has clinically died has not had a near-death experience, as the world describes it. They've had a near-life experience. They get a chance to go back and reclaim their human lives, being. And this guy is a very powerful example of walking away from a non-being life with all the stuff. He shares how he's got this mansion and that mansion and this, you know, megabuck art, et cetera, and this Learjet. And he gets rid of it all, and he actually buys himself a double-wide mobile home. And that's what he lives in now. And he teaches in a college, touching people with a human life. My goodness, how different would our world be if the president of, I don't care, whatever, ABC company, There's a cool story that Ram Dass tells about a man who was a banker on Wall Street, vice president of a commercial bank on Wall Street, and touched into Ram Dass's work, quit the bank, and followed Ram Dass for about, if I remember correctly, about 10 years. And 10 years later, he's back, he's in New York, and he's going down the street, you know, with his long hair down to his buns and his hippie clothes and all, and he meets the president of the bank, and the president greets him, "Oh, hey, how are you doing? It's, you know, it's good to see you. You know, you were the best vice president of commercial loans we ever had, and we just had the vice president of commercial loans leave the bank. Would you like your old job back?" And he's like, "Yes." And he goes back and he cuts his hair and he gets all business looking. But now he's not there about money. He says, "What I'm there to do as the vice president of commercial loans is touch people with the active presence of love that otherwise would never see it or hear it." What do you suppose if the president of the ABC Corporation and the XYZ Corporation were touching the people they work with, instead of with the insanity of more profit, more money, were touching people with the active presence of love? Guess what? War would disappear from planet Earth. What a way to celebrate Memorial Day. What a way to honor those who've been forced to kill, to die, to be maimed, to be injured, to be emotionally scarred for life. And David is preparing actually a presentation, David being former military, and he shared some of his experiences on Memorial Day on the show, and very powerfully, I might say, and we've been chatting the last couple of days, and he's putting together a presentation for us on some of the things that we don't usually see that are kept well hidden from us or kind of kept buried. You know, very much like the film we talked about yesterday, Brzezinski. And if you go to BrzezinskiMovie.com, I don't know if Jeannie's put a link on the website for it yet, but BrzezinskiMovie.com, and I'm sure any way you spell it, it'll get to it. But basically shows what's hidden, what in order to keep control of people and keep them in pain and suffering and scam them for all their wealth, a particular industry is doing. And the military's playing, it's in the same game. And so David's putting together a presentation of some of the human impacts of that. And is there any kind of a preview you'd like to give us, David, of where we're going with that?
Yes, Michael. Wait a minute. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's several things. You know, after watching this movie on Brzezinski yesterday and seeing how a lot of things are set up, and, you know, one of the things that you talk about is when we do not have the knowledge, and we're not aware of what it is that's going on, and things are set up in such a way that it's kept from us, and it's disguised through celebrations, and as you talked about, the celebrations have become more of a party, and it lasts a few minutes, rather than to really look and see what it is that's involved in this. And there's so many things that are talked about war, and most everyone agrees that war is horrible, and yet we continue to be involved in it. You know, the war that's going on right now is the second longest war that we've had going. I mean, it's amazing. You know, the Vietnam War was the longest war that we ever had. And, we're going to talk about the effects as to what it has on families and what it has on the finances and who's profiting and what the effects are on the veterans themselves and what we might do about it. You know, as you talked about, the real key of it is that, to me, the real key is for me to do my work, that whenever we talk, whenever there's a conversation around war or whatever, whether it's about the effects of it and what the effects are, it is what is it that it resonates in me. If we talk about suicides, if we talk about the abuse that happens in families, if we talk about the separation of loved ones when they return and what happens with them and what really is going on with the veterans now. And so that just kind of gives you a little preview. And if people have some questions or comments that they want to make on it and or about it, or to email some thought, their thoughts around it before we even begin. And tomorrow I'll have something, I'll have it put together, and it'll just open the door for what needs to happen, because with to stop it on a large scale, it's going to be with each individual. So it just kind of gives you an idea of what we're going to talk about. And if someone has some comments now with it, I'll be glad to give my thoughts around it and ideas around it.
Awesome. Awesome, David. Thank you for that. Tim, do you have anything to share with us this morning?
Well, there's just way too much. I'm getting... I sent you a link to a video that's on YouTube about a mother who was at breakfast one day and her child had a very strong allergic reaction, and prior to that she had no interest in hearing about food or food additives, but that sparked her to become very interested. And so her talk, it's about an 18-minute talk, it's on TED, it's also on YouTube, about the modified growth hormones they put in our food and how it's causing so many problems across the U.S. and how all of the other major countries refuse to put that stuff in their food because it hasn't been proven safe.
Right.
And the U.S. in 94 and 97 took a different tack and said, well, we're going to put it in because it hasn't been proven harmful yet.
Right, yep.
How it has increased the cancer rates, and it has increased the allergies. The peanut allergies have over more than doubled, and milk allergies are off the charts because this modified growth hormone is in the food. So that's another video that's out there that, again, I think needs us all to do our work and focus on love and remove anything in our system that's less than love so that that can be overcome.
Yeah, if you go to the Brzezinski movie website, you can email Brzezinski's producer, a guy named, I thought it was Mercola, but it's not. It's I think it's Merkel is his name, and I may not be pronouncing it correctly. But anyway, you can email him, and I actually emailed him this morning, acknowledge him for the absolutely professional production he did of the Brzezinski movie, and that is an illustration of a principle that's controlling most of our world, the non-being mind. And so that would be another topic that he could do an expose on, is exactly that one, because it's precisely the same thing that he demonstrates in the Brzezinski movie. A special interest takes hold, and it uses our supposed government in order to run and ruin people's lives.
Yeah.
And
this woman's name is Robin O'Brien, R-O-B-Y-N, O apostrophe capital B-R-I-E-N, and she gave this talk in this year. So you can search for
cool.
her either on YouTube or on TED. And it's only an 18-minute talk, 18 and a half minutes, but it's powerful, and she's just a mother who stumbled across this, and now they're calling her the Erin Brockovich of food. And so...
Well, it would be awesome to see her honored. Unfortunately, most of the intellectually guarded non-being minds will dismiss her as some kind of a paranoid and carry on with the brainwash that goes on in the culture that, hey, everything that we say is safe because we're making megabecks from it is safe, and everything that we say is healing is healing. And, you know, Brzezinski is just an example of that, and it's absolutely awesome to see that come forward into the world so crisply and so clearly to any mind that's interested in truth. They're going to get it and they're going to see it. And, you know, there's another, you know, we're talking about the word we've coined, the non-being life. There's another video on TED, which anybody might want to see. And that's the story of a neurobiologist, I forget exactly what her field was, but basically she worked with the brain, Jill Bolte Taylor, and I understand her video is on TED. And Jill got up one morning and is ready to exercise, and all of a sudden starts to realize that she's having a left brain stroke. And she watches, in essence, she watches how her left brain world crumbles, all the drama, the trauma, the intellectuality, the non-being things that drive people in their worlds. And she comes back into an experience of her real true life, of a human life. It's a really powerful portrayal because she shares and shows exactly how this whole construct of the left brain is totally, completely false. And when the left brain stops functioning, it falls apart. And in essence, the left brain, when it stops functioning and its world falls apart, you get to be out of your mind. For years, we've been saying to people, in order to heal, you got to be out of your mind. In order to live a human life, you got to be out of your mind. And of course, the first thing that we do with kids, pardon me, when we bring them into the world is, we got to get you, and, you know, these schools. We've been in some major cities recently, and you see these ads for these schools that, you know, put your children in our hands by the age of 2.5, and we'll give you a genius. We will, you know, fill their minds with so much awesome, and you'll have a moneymaker for life. And it's like, what an insanity. You know, the secrets are not hidden in the mind, or they are hidden by the mind. Life is not from the mind. The mind is supposed to be our servant. It's not supposed to be our master. And so, you know, when we actually shift, and people say, well, that's utopian, it's not possible. Excuse me, it is possible. It is happening. Take a look. Go watch those films. Watch Jill Bolte Taylor. Watch this young lady that's, people would say, just a mom. What an awesome posture and what an awesome position to hold in the world, just a mom. And in fact, Jeannie, we haven't shared that story about moms on the show yet. And if you could, I don't have an internet connection here, but maybe you could jump over to that, and that we've got on the website, the link of the story about a mom and what really the story is. And you could share that with us. But if you watch these videos, you'll see that we see it is happening. Being is returning to the world in so many circles. Now, all we need to do is get it to the upper echelon of the military. And there's no different than any of us. You know, we're all the same. We're all made of the stuff called love. And no matter how deeply somebody's imbued in hostility, fear, rage, grief, pain, terror, violence, viciousness, I don't care how fully they are engaged in it, none of it's necessary, and it can all end. And all we have to do is realize who we are and start to move in direction of creating a world out of who we are. And when enough people will say, okay, I'm going to stop voting for the insanity. I'm not going to support the insanity. I'm not going to be part of the insanity. If I have a job that's about insanity, and you look at the courage that this gentleman did to produce the movie I Am, I mean, he had megabucks from the movie industry, and he could have continued. And he admits, he says in the movie, my industry is part of the problem. And he's starting to structure his life out of love. Everybody has that same essence in them. And, you know, what we're working toward is creating support to reach critical mass. And, you know, if you go back into the ancient Aramaic, they said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. What does that mean? That means that if we can get enough human beings to come out of a non-being world and be resurrected into being to put an end to what was called in the ancient teachings the first death, and actually function as love, not function as moneymakers, not function as machines, not function as manipulators, not function as killers, but rather function as love. That's going to hit a critical mass, and when it does, there will be an energetic shift on planet Earth, and everybody will make that move. Now, if you look at the whole story of 2012, and it's been a while since we talked about that, but there's another awesome video by a fellow named Ian Lungold, and it's on the Mayan calendar. And, you know, if the Mayans looked at what we've done with this and calling this an end-of-the-world scenario, they would laugh in their drawers. I mean, it would just be a joke to them that you know, there's a movie out there called 2012, terror, horror, end of the world, you know, apocalyptic. Let's keep the blinders on people of hostility and fear about everything. go and Google Ian Lungold. I think it's Mayan Magics is his website, M-A-G-I-X, I believe it is, and it may have an S on the end of it. And there's a really fabulous description of what the 2012 calendar thing is about. And it's not about the end of the world, and it's not about the end of a calendar. He explains that there are three Mayan calendars that the Mayans used, and this one in particular is one that people used on a daily basis. They would consult this calendar and look at what was the world's energy supporting them in today in their function. What was their purpose? And what was the world supporting them in? And he goes through how there are several stages and several periods identified, and the calendar goes back like, 16 or 17 billion years. And, for those who are into the creation, you have to be literal 7 days. In the Aramaic language, when they talk about the 7 days of creation, it doesn't talk about seven 24-hour periods. Now, if you want to stick to your Greek theology, hang with it. They're 24-hour days. That's not what's there. In the original language, it talks about periods. It doesn't talk about days. We're not talking about literal. Remember that those teachings, it even comes through in the Greek where it says to God, a day is like 1,000 years. So it's not about a specific 24-hour period, as many would want to do it. There are time periods that were called a day. There were stages. There were phases. And so what he explains is this 16.4 billion year calendar. It's been a couple of years since I watched it. And it goes through several stages. And we're in a stage right now, according to the Mayan calendar, where the energy is about control and manipulation. And that the shift is taking place and moving in a direction that will culminate in 2012, where the energetic shift will be to that of ethics and integrity. And just look at what's coming out. Look at this Brzezinski movie. Look at Aaron Brockovich. Look at this film I Am. And there are just thousands of others and millions of people around the world who are saying, let's wake up, folks. Now, in order to wake up, you need to let go of what doesn't belong. There is an energetic shift coming that will put an end to the world of control and power. And the power brokers and power mongers are struggling to keep a hold, but they're being exposed. Watch Brzezinski. It's the principle that's operating in the military, in most businesses, in most churchianity. It's the same principle that's operating. And you get a really good bird's eye view of it and how sophisticated it is. Now, a lot of people want to be sophisticated. Folks, we've been conned again. The word sophistry comes from the word that describes a group of philosophers who were back in Greece and in centuries ago. And these people went around the country training for big bucks, the children of the wealthy, how to tell lies and make their lies look true. And, this Brzezinski movie just exposes that whole thing, just like Aaron Brockovich exposes it, just like I Am exposes it, and the control and power and insanity that throws people's lives away for money is being exposed all over the globe. Forgiveness, if you've got fear about that, or if you're in that game of hostility and fear, if you're living a non-being life, there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to live there. You don't have to do it for another day. There is a tool. It's called forgiveness. And it's the tool with which you go inside yourself and remove what never belonged. The sophists took the tool and, through the Greek philosophy that's taught in most churchianity today, it presents that forgiveness as, somebody outside of you is the problem in your life. They caused all this fear in you. They caused all this pain in you, but you just forgive them. That's sophistry. That's telling a lie and making the lie look true. It's time for us to put an end to the lies. It's time for us to wake up, and we're here to support you in waking up. Jeannie, any callers?
Michael?
Anything? Yes,
Michael,
sir.
Let me just add, one of the things I like to talk about your discussion, I believe it was yesterday when you were talking about the Brzezinski movie, is you suggested that people have a stack of worksheets with them when they go to watch that movie, because so many times when we hear about horrible injustice and greed causing pain and suffering for people, it stirs up within us our own sadness, our own judgment of ourself from times in the past when we have been greedy or we have hurt people, and we have the tendency to project that on others, thinking that they are causing me to be upset about their greed or about their hurting someone else. And you brought home again yesterday that the real thing to do is keep the focus of my awareness on me and my emotions and understand, truly train myself to understand, I'm creating that from my own pain, from my own judgment of myself, and that's what needs to be dismantled so that the world has more of the active presence of love in its conscious awareness. As I am simply a part of the world's conscious awareness, as I focus my conscious awareness on my source's love rather than on my pain, I amplify and extend that. And I just wanted to add that. I thought that was so nice yesterday that you recommended that we have our worksheets with us, that we have whatever tools we know how to use to keep ourselves centered in love or returning back to the focus of love, even when we're learning about tragedies and horrors and greeds that are causing a ripple of something other than love.
Good point, and that fits perfectly with our commitment to Memorial Day and to memorialize these folks who've gone through those horrors. This is day 16 of it, folks, and we're inviting you to pick up a worksheet and to look at something in your life. If you look at Brzezinski and you go into rage, now, one of my films, there was a time period when I would not go to a violent movie, and I one day had the guidance to go and see this horrible film, very violent, called The Island. And it's like, I'm not going to go. And my guidance was, you're going to go. I'm not going to go. You're going to go. Okay, I'll go. I sit there in the opening picture in the film, or the opening scene, somebody climbs over the back of a boat in the Bahamas and very graphically hacks off somebody's leg. And it's like, what the hell am I doing here? And the guidance I got back was, Michael, you have a belief in a world of bodies, of suffering and pain, and that's inside of you. Those little flickers of light on a screen can't cause anything in you, but they can show you what's in there. And if you're feeling it, it's not about what's happening on the screen, it's about what's happening in you. So sit here, breathe, and forgive this in you, so that you don't have to go out and create it in your life to work through it. Because life is going to give us the opportunity to work through everything we've never wanted to work through and never wanted to look at. So I sat and breathed and got some good work done there, and now I go see violent movies all the time, and I'm there consciously, purposely connected to and holding a space of being and letting whatever's in my multi-generational database called the body-mind unit surface for healing. And I was kind of, in a sense, pleasantly surprised when I watched Brzezinski. I had some frustration come up for me that I had to work out and work through to forgive. And that's where the suggestion, make sure you got your worksheets there, came from. But actually, there's a film that came out several years ago that had me really work on and move through the desire for vengeance toward those who perpetuate those insanities. The film was, let's see, what's the name of it? Gee, you know the film I'm thinking of. My brain is just somewhere else. Braveheart. In the scene where, you know, one of the generals comes up to the king and says, you know, okay, we can attack now. And the king says, well, send in the Irish. And the general says, but we have arrows. We can do this from a distance. All those Irish will die. And he says, arrows cost us money. Send in the Irish. Kill them. I mean, when I first saw that movie, there was such vengeance. I wanted to kill the king. I mean, that was the rage in me. And over the years, whenever I felt I needed to work on another level, I'd watch Braveheart. And now I can watch Braveheart pretty smoothly and hold a space of love for the king. And when I watched Brzezinski with the fact that especially one of the things they demonstrate in this film is how many children have been sacrificed on this altar of the FDA, and with brain tumors that are curable, and the suffering that goes along with that. And I was pretty clear on, as I say, I had a little frustration to work through, but was pretty clear, and as opposed to vengeance, it's like, we just, you know, these are other humans who've lost their human attribute, functioning out of a non-human mind, and you look at the insanity that's done. You know, there's one point in the Brzezinski movie where they've tried to get him on the fact that his procedure for cancer doesn't work, and they try to get his patients to file complaints against him, and they said, why would I? He brought me healing, you know. They couldn't find anybody to complain about him. So when they filed an amended complaint after convening grand jury after grand jury after grand jury, just vendetta, trying to get this guy and shut him down because they wanted to steal his patents, and they go into that in the movie too. But in the showing of this, when they finally indict him, they make a specific point in the indictment that this has got nothing to do with whether it works or not. That's irrelevant. This guy is healing thousands of people of cancers with totally non-toxic means. He's a medical doctor. He's a PhD. He's healing thousands of people. And the FDA goes after him and says, and that fact that his process works, we're not going to bring that up because it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. And that's the insanity of the non-being mind. And, you know, we're here to hold a space. You know, sometimes I function out of insanity. Sometimes you do. We're all the same. And we're here to create a support space for healing and moving through that so that we can reclaim a human life. And no matter what we're facing, no matter what we're dealing with, we function as the active presence of love. Real humans. Wouldn't it be awesome if 7 billion people were doing that? Do you think we could have a homeless person in the world? Do you think we could have a starving person in the world? Do you think we could have one child in the world that's going to die of waterborne disease that's totally preventable? We have a friend who actually invented a device that is human-powered. Now, in the past, human-powered devices, if you wanted to, say, for instance, pump water out of the ground, you might be able to pump for 3 minutes, and you'd be exhausted, and you'd have, you know, 2 cups of water. This fellow's created, and his company has created, a device that uses human power. They can send it to third-world countries. In fact, when Haiti, the whole Haiti thing came down, they sent one of these devices with some people that were working in Haiti, and a human being can pump this thing all day. Actually, kids play with it, and while they're playing, they push back and forth this pendulum, and they're just, you know, like a seesaw, they're just playing with this thing, and while they're doing it, through human power, they can pump hundreds of gallons of water. And this device was in Haiti, operational, working, I guess, 24 hours a day. There was a part that broke down. Let's talk about the non-being mind and its insanity. So here's a group of people who are on a humanitarian mission providing clean water. This thing's got a water filtration system, can take the water, the mud, out of the worst areas in the earth and bring out pristine, clear drinking water, just on human power. But there was a part that went bad in it. And so they sent a replacement part. And in order to let the replacement part into the country of Haiti, hey, folks, here's another documentary, just like Brzezinski's. In order to let it into the country, they charged $3,000. In order to give the people who didn't have water, drinking water, for a replacement part, not something that was being sold, not a commercial product, just a part to keep water going to people, the government of Haiti charge $3,000. Folks, that's what runs the non-being mind's world. And, you know, here we are. Are we able to hold a space of love for that and bring change to it, or do we go into rage and fear about it and become part of the problem? Because if we go into rage and fear about it, we contribute the energy on an energetic level. You know, there's a fellow named Jack Safady, who's a physicist, and he says that the world is more like a giant thought than a giant machine, and that every thought is communicated simultaneously throughout all of the planet. So if you have a thought based in hostility or fear, guess what? You assist and create the world of hostility and fear. If you choose to be responsible, to stop your hostility and fear, right in the middle of the sentence, if you're willing to be held accountable, and you're willing to go, oh, I'm in hostility or fear, oh, okay, I can stop my conversation now. I choose to be a contributor to peace instead of war. But, of course, once that insane mind gets going, it's not interested in that conversation. It just knows that it wants what it wants when it wants it. And it's time for us to be restored. And, Jeanine, were you able by any chance to find that thing we've got on the website about mothers? Because this
yes.
just speaks of mothers in an awesome way, and mothers who are in this non-being world often demeaned in order to get them out there in commercial production, in order to put them out in the battlefield to be killed. But would you share it with us, sweetie?
Yes, and also while we're talking about it, if you go to our website, which is www.whyagain.com, whyagain.com/links.php. I have out there the Brzezinski movie, the Jill Bolte Taylor movie, the Ian Lungol movie, and Dr. Tim, I've put out your latest link that you sent us as well. So there's lots of links out there to different things, but all of those are out there so you can go to one place and be able to click on all of them instead of hunting and searching for each one individually.
Cool.
So,
did you put a link, sweetie, to Dr. Tim's Sunday service too? He did
that's
Unity?
What I said. I just put his link out there.
Okay.
So,
fabulous. Well,
he was
also talking about another link that he sent us about this woman doing the stuff with food editors, so maybe we can put that one on there, too.
Okay.
Thank you for the awesome work you do.
Okay. So the story is just a mom. It says, I stood in a line as a woman named Emily renewed her driver's license at the county clerk's office, and she was asked what her occupation was. She hesitated, uncertain how to classify herself. What I mean is, explained the recorder, do you have a job or are you just a, of course I have a job, snapped Emily, appearing a little embarrassed. I'm a mom. We don't list moms as an occupation, but housewife covers it, said the recorder emphatically. It sounded demeaning. I forgot all about Emily until one day I found myself in the same situation. This time it was at our own town hall. The clerk was obviously a career woman, poised, efficient, and possessed a high-sounding title like official interrogator or town registrar. What is your occupation, she probed. What made me say it, I do not know. The word simply popped out. I am self-employed as a research associate in the field of child development and human relations and executive assistant to the CEO of my company. The clerk paused, ballpoint pen frozen in midair, and looked up as though she had not heard correctly. I repeated the title of my chosen field slowly, emphasizing the most significant words. Then I stared with wonder as my pronouncement was written by a hand that was proud to make my acquaintance. Written into the public record for all the world to see, it was in bold black ink on the official questionnaire. Might I ask, she said with new interest, just what do you do in your field? Coolly, with a new sense of pride at the realization of just how important my purpose in the world really is, I heard myself reply, I have a continuing program of research. What mother doesn't? That's in parentheses. In the laboratory and in the field, normally I would have said indoors and out, I'm working for my masters, the whole blessed family, or whole blessed family, and already have 4 credits, all daughters. And I handle all aspects of our company's business. My work is acknowledged as one of the most demanding in the humanities. Any mother care to disagree with that? And I often work 14 hours a day. 24 is really more like it. The lives I touch alter the course of history, and my chosen career is more challenging than most run-of-the-mill jobs. The rewards are out of this world, much more than just money, prestige, power, or success. There was an interesting note of respect in the clerk's voice as she completed the form, stood up, and personally ushered me to the door. As I drove into our driveway, buoyed up by how important my position was, I was greeted by my lab assistants, ages 13, 7, and 3. Upstairs, I could hear our experimental model in child development program, which is a new baby, testing out its new vocal patterns. I had scored a beat on the bureaucracy and the cloud of air culture has put on motherhood, and it was erased forever. I had gone on the official records as someone more distinguished and indispensable to mankind and than just another mom. Motherhood, what a glorious calling, even when there is no title on the door. Now, grandmothers and grandfathers, recognize your importance as senior research associates in the field of child development and human relations. Great-grandmothers and grandfathers, accept your with dignity your role as executive senior research associates. Aunts and uncles, take your place as associate research assistants. And dads, thanks for your part, your love, and support for the most important human grouping in the whole world, our family. May your troubles be less, your blessings be more, and nothing but happiness comes through your door, and this be the best year yet of your eternal life.
So where is that on the web?
It is, let's see, I actually am just now putting the link in the chat room. It's whyagain.com/media. And the, under that, you can find all kinds of things. And then /justamom.pdf. We have a link on our website that says stories, quotes, and links. And under each of those, you can pick up, there's all kinds of.
Okay, but this one is under media? On your media
that's
page?
That's the direct one. If you're in the chat room, I put the link there, but it's actually under stories, but the direct link is under media.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So there's a description from the place of being of what a human mother is. And notice that our non-being world describes a mom as something that needs a career and needs to be able to be free to go out and kill people and be killed in war and be maimed, emotionally crippled, so that when she gets home, she can emotionally cripple her children. Just like fathers have been programmed by the non-being world, that in order to be a real man, in order to serve your country, you go out and you learn how to kill and you kill people, or you get killed and you get maimed and emotionally crippled and come home and emotionally cripple your children so they'll think it's a really good thing to do to go out and become heroes and kill people. Excuse me, that's the non-being world. That's the whole insanity that we're facing. And, you know, this great deceiver is so slippery that it all gets turned around to look really good, you know. Well, you got to have that career. You got to make money. You got to be your own person. You got to. Excuse me. Folks, what we need is real human beings, the active presence of love in the home, two of them. We need two of those. They're called a mother and a father to raise a child. And when we do that, yes, sweetie?
We have two callers on the line, and we've got 6 minutes.
Oh, awesome. Well, let's hear from a caller.
Okay, the first one starts out, it's initials, so it's W-O-R. You're on the line.
Here we go. Well,
that one was a mess. All right, let's try the next one. It starts with PW3. You're on the air. All right, we've got jokers.
Well, no, we've got non-being playing around. So, okay, we'll just hold a blessing and carry on. Any other thoughts in the chat room? And, you know, maybe if, you know, we've had a few of those recently, I don't know, maybe it's going to get to the point we're going to have to somehow pre-screen them or do something, because it's just, like, I don't even know why they're bothering listening. Except, wake up, folks. Come on, wake up.
Okay, this one I think might be genuine. Oh, they just disappeared. 804, if you're, I was just getting ready to click you on and you disappeared, so if you could either press 1 or come back in. We've got about 5 minutes. Oh, there they are. Area code 804. You're on the air. Who do we have?
We have the president of the International Fan Club for Dr. Michael Rice calling from Mars. How are you today?
I'm good, Edward. How are you?
I'm feeling so good that I can only tell you that every time I'm in my non-being, the red light goes up and says, listen to Michael. Get in touch with what I'm thinking, and then I know that my feelings will absolutely be cleared, and I bring about peace and serenity. So thanks to you, Dr. Rice. I'm following all the rules, and life is very full and rich for me right this moment.
So, Edward, I acknowledge you for tapping in and choosing to live a life in being. How would you assess, or how would you express the difference between the moments that you've spent in non-being and how many of them you had, and when did you start to move toward being, and what did that look like? Can you tell us? I think this would be something that would really inspire our other listeners who perhaps haven't put the pen to the paper yet and done the work.
Well, that's a very insightful question, because one night in your group, I could hear myself expressing non-resistance, and you just got this grin, and all of a sudden I felt this rush of energy, of anxiety, and it felt like, gosh, this is what I've been dealing with since a child. Why don't you learn to listen first, Edward, and stop making a judgment on whether something is either right or wrong? Why don't you just try and be? And then I looked at my worksheet, and I could see the word false lie, that my thoughts were a false lie. What I was telling myself was just a state of being disassociated, as you all call it, from my mind. And that peacefulness came over me, and you grinned at me, and I grinned back at you, and I thought, gosh, this is one of the few times in my life that I've listened to this inner voice. And that's where it all began, listening to
awesome.
That voice.
So what does it look like, let's say, results with the people around you when you come from this newly realized state compared to when you came from the old state?
Well, my new demeanor is I watch what I'm feeling, and then I watch what I do with actually my mouth. I see if I start to smile, I extend love, and then people are very receptive to me. But the minute I get very intense, I know that I'm I'm projecting fear. And people mistake me, even in my intensity. It may have nothing to do with I'm upset or mad at you, but my own self, you know, my only feeling of feeling no good at that particular moment is misinterpreted by the world as, you know, Edward is out to dominate or control you. So I'm very conscious now on how I present myself, and I realize that you win so much by smiling at people and supporting them in love. And that's what my focus is right now, to get over my intensity.
Awesome. Well, I acknowledge you for the work you've done, and we certainly have appreciated your support all along the way. I hope you're enjoying the new copy of the Enlightenment book from the Aramaic on the Kabbalah's manuscript. One of the suggestions I would have with that book that you might want to do is go to Matthew 5, where they do the Beatitudes, and then in the books there's a dictionary. Longhand, do your own translation of the Beatitudes. It's awesome when you do it from the Aramaic. It's very powerful. And we'll reinforce everything we've been talking about and working with while we've been there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Edward,
thank you very much. It's time for you to sign off.
Okay, we appreciate your love and support. Bless you.
My regards to Jean. Have a wonderful day. Thanks, Dr. Rice.
Okay. So we're in Medford, Oregon for the next week at Unity of Medford. Look on our website, www.whyagain.com. Our intensive set will start on the 18th of July at Heartland if you're ready to take your work to the next level and experience the result that Edward just shared with us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Goodbye.
thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.